Gamar Jova, and welcome to the History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is Myth 6, the Tale of Helen the Beautiful. I will be joined today by my friend Elspeth for the discussion. But before we start, let's give thanks to our newest Patreon member, Momoka, who has entered our ranks as an Eristavi and gains access to bonus episodes, and will be dubbed Eristavi Maruka of Sarpi, Germito Lobis Herzoginia. You too can get access to bonus episodes, a custom royal name, and if you become a Spaspeto, voting power for the next episode, and access to the podcast's Discord server. You can also pledge as an Asnauri just for general support. And we just released an episode on Patreon where I discuss Bakur the Iberian with Marco Capelli of Storia d'Italia. Feel free to join us on there, and, well, let's begin with the myth. There was a king. He had 3 sons and 3 daughters. When the old king passed away, after 2 days, there came a dev to marry the first daughter and sat on a messenger stone. The king's eldest son came out and asked the dev, "Who are you and why are you sitting there?"
"I came here to marry your eldest sister," answered the dev.
Then the eldest brother replied, "You dirty trash, go get lost from here. Who are you that you want me to give you my sister?" The dev disobeyed and continued sitting at the same place. Then the middle brother came out and saw that the dev was still there. The dev asked the same question to this brother too. The middle brother also refused to give him his elder sister. The dev still kept sitting there. At last, the youngest brother came out and asked the dev, "What do you want? Why did you come here?" The dev answered,
"I came for the young lady. I came here to ask for your sister's hand."
"Wait a minute," said the lad. "I will bring my sister here and marry her to you." Then he went in, and he brought out his elder sister and gave her to the dev. This dev took the young lady and left, but kept in his memory the brother's actions. Now, the other devs came also to ask for the hands of 2 other sisters, and like before, the elder and middle brothers refused to give their sisters to the devs. Only the youngest brother agreed to marry his sisters to the devs and sent the sisters with them. So the sisters were now married, and there were only 3 brothers and their mother left. Once, these brothers went out to compete in a shooting game. At this time, there comes an old woman carrying spring water in a jar. The youngest brother shot an arrow and pierced the jar. The old woman walks and the water flows from her jar. Suddenly, she stops and sees the flowing water.
"Oh, what could possibly have happened to me? Who could do such a thing to me?"
she asked, and started looking around for an answer. She looked here and there, and suddenly noticed a young man nearby. She told the lad,
"Oh, you unfortunate young man. What can I say to you? You are such a handsome lad. I can't spare you to curse you, but I will still tell you this. Let it be the desire of Helen the Beautiful be your downfall."
The lad said, "Well, who is that Helen the Beautiful, and where is she? I will go at once and find her." The lad came home and told his mother, "Mother, give me some food for the road. I am setting out for the journey to find Helen the Beautiful." Mother coldly refused her son.
"Don't go, my son. You're my only hero and my hope, and you're headed to the faraway road. Please, stay with me. Don't let my worries about you kill me."
The lad did not listen and still set out on the road. He only took 1 kerchief from his home. This kerchief would give him any kind of food he wished to eat. After a long or short journey, the lad got tired. He sat down to rest near a spring and started eating. At this time, 1 servant girl came to the spring, and as soon as she saw the lad, she said in her heart, "This lad resembles my mistress." She filled up her jar with water and quickly returned to her house. When she came back, she reported to her mistress,
"My mistress, I saw a lad who has come to our spring. He looks just exactly like you."
The mistress became angry with her servant and told her, "What are you talking about, poor creature? How can some lad possibly resemble me? I am a daughter of a king, married here from a faraway country."
"No, my dear mistress," continued the servant, "without a doubt, he is a relative to you."
"Well, since you insist, go there and call him.
Tell him to come here. Let me see who he might be, said the mistress. So this servant stood up, went to the spring, and told the lad, Now, follow me. My mistress wants to see you. The lad rose and went after the girl. The mistress came out, looked at the lad, and recognized her youngest brother. The lad recognized his elder sister, too. They embraced each other. My dear brother, what force threw you in this country? Asked the sister. I have no choice, my sister. I am on my way to find Helen the Beautiful, said the lad. Well, my dear brother, it's good to hear what you are telling me, but what can we do now that your brother-in-law will come here and eat you? Said the sister. Why does he have to eat me? What is the reason? Asked the brother. The sister said, Don't you know that your brother-in-law is a dev and not a human? What to do, my sister? Said the lad. Let him eat me if I am destined to be eaten. Then the sister told the lad, Let me at least try to hide you. Go and hide in that millstone. So the lad went and hid there. After some time, there comes a dev. He is coming and bringing environs of the entire world with him, wood, meat, and other things. As soon as he entered the house, instantly he felt a smell and told his wife,
My wife, it smells like a human here. You have brought some stranger home.
Don't talk like that, said the dev's wife. Am I not a daughter of a human myself? How could you distinguish so soon the smell of another human? The dev replied with anger,
Now tell me, who is hiding here? Or I will eat you both, you and him together.
The frightened lady then asked the dev, I have to tell you something, but don't get angry at me. If someone came here from my fatherland, what would you do to him? How would you treat him? The dev said,
If the guest were your elder or middle brothers, I would eat them right away. But if it were your younger brother, I would set my bowl in front of him. I would feed him my dinner, and I would even help him if he had any troubles.
The sister was pleased with the dev's words. Immediately, she called her brother, took him out of the millstone where he was hiding, and showed him to the dev. The dev immediately recognized the lad and said,
So you come here, my youngest brother-in-law. It is good that you have come and visited us here. Now tell me your worries. What kind of trouble are you in? Why did you come to this side of the world?
First, the lad refused to say the reason of his journey and said, I only came here to see you.
No, said the dev. You're without a doubt in some kind of trouble. Otherwise, you would not visit us here.
Now, the lad was forced to tell his brother-in-law all the troubles of his heart and that he was traveling to find Helen the Beautiful.
You gave me a hard task, said the dev. I am the king of the birds and I have no knowledge where that Helen the Beautiful lives, but I can at once gather all the birds of my kingdom and ask them at the place of Helen the Beautiful.
Then the dev called his birds. Instantly, countless birds gathered, and the dev asked,
Now tell me, where does Helen the Beautiful dwell?
Together, the birds replied to their king,
We neither know the place where Helen the Beautiful lives, nor have we ever heard her name.
In that case, go back to your places, said the dev.
The lad said to the dev, Now I have to continue my journey and go my way. Somehow, I have to find Helen the Beautiful. The dev tried to stop the lad.
Forget about her. Don't go there. You will not find her and you will not survive. I pity you. I don't want you to die.
The lad still would not listen. Then the dev said to his brother-in-law,
Since you don't believe me, wait. At least take this kerchief. It will be useful to you.
What is the use of the kerchief? Asked the lad. The dev said,
When you are hungry and you wish for dinner, the kerchief will give you all the food you wish for.
The lad told the dev, Well, because you want kindness to me, then here is a glass. Fill it with milk and put it into the millstone where I was hiding. When the milk turns red, then know that I am dead, and if you wish me well, come and rescue me. The lad continued his journey. He came to a spring and sat down to rest. He sits there and eats his dinner. Here, too, comes one servant girl. The same story repeats as in the first case. Here, the lad will see his middle sister and her dev husband, his brother-in-law. The lad takes a kerchief, also from this brother-in-law, and continues on his way. Now, he comes to his third sister's house. Here, the dev came and asked the lad,
Where are you headed, my dear brother-in-law?
The lad answered, I am going to find Helen the Beautiful.
Oh! Who might be that Helen the Beautiful? Said the dev. I am the king of frogs, and I have never heard of that Helen the Beautiful. How do you know about her?
Then this dev called all the frogs of his entire kingdom and asked,
Now tell me, do you know where Helen the Beautiful lives?
The frogs gathered in front of the king And altogether they replied,
"We don't know where Helen the Beautiful dwells."
The king asked once more,
"Are there any more frogs left in my kingdom that are not present here?"
The frogs replied,
"There is one lame old stubborn frog left. Now, go and bring him here. He will know the place of Helen the Beautiful,"
ordered the dev. The frogs went to bring the lame frog to the king. They brought the frog and came back. The dev asked,
"Now, you lame frog, tell us where Helen the Beautiful is."
"Oh, you poor creatures," started the frog. "Why are you asking for the place of Helen the Beautiful? Who can reach her? She is hidden in a place unseen by men. A dev has captured her. That lad will not have courage to go to that place."
"No, you old frog," said the dev. "Don't talk too much. Tell us, which road goes to Helen the Beautiful?"
"There."
The lame frog looked ahead.
"He has to go straight to the road. As soon as he crosses a large open meadow, he will see a house. That house has a big slab stone door. Who can possibly open that door other than that dev?"
The lad did not listen to anyone's advice and instead continued on his way. He left a glass of milk to his younger brother-in-law too and told him the same words he had said to his other brothers-in-law. So he went to the place of Helen the Beautiful. He approached a spring that was close to the house of Helen the Beautiful. A young servant girl came to the spring to fill a jar with water. "Here," she saw the handsome young lad with a beautiful table and food spread in front of him. The servant was surprised by the young lad's behavior and said in her heart, "Such a handsome lad he is, and such a pity that he crossed this part of the world where there is no memory of any human. Such a pity that he will die." The astonished servant came to her mistress and told her, "I saw someone, a human, at our spring." "Oh, you poor thing," told her the mistress. "You probably saw some dream. Who can possibly come to this place?" "No, my dear mistress," continued the servant. "I truly saw a handsome lad. If you see him, you will not be able to take your eyes off him." "How can I trust this dirty girl? How can I believe that such a handsome lad has come here?" said the mistress. The servant repeated, "This is true, my mistress." "Then, if it is true, go and tell him to come here," said the mistress. The servant went to the spring and approached the place where the lad was resting. She told him, "Follow me. My mistress is calling you. She wants to see you." The lad asked, "Tell me something. Of what descent is your mistress, or what is her name?" "Have you not heard the name of Helen the Beautiful?" told him the servant. Very pleased and delighted that he finally found the place of Helen the Beautiful, the lad stood up and went to her house. He unlocked the door, entered the house, and as soon as he saw Helen the Beautiful, he lost his mind. Helen the Beautiful took out her handkerchief, and as soon as she touched the lad with it, he regained consciousness. She asked, "Where are you from, and where are you going?" "I came here to see you," answered the lad. "If the dev finds out, he will eat both of us," said Helen the Beautiful. Then she asked the lad, "You seem to have some kerchief. Why don't you show it to me?" "Why not? I will show the kerchief to you. Only, let me say a word to you," replied the lad. "Say two words. You have my permission," said Helen the Beautiful. "Then let me take a look under your knees and I will show you my kerchief," said the lad. Then Helen glanced at her servants with an astonished face and asked, "Can I do such a thing?" The servants replied, "Why, you can, our mistress. It is not a big thing. We are here. So what are you afraid of?" So Helen the Beautiful let the lad look under her knees. She fulfilled her promise. The lad looked and looked, and when he got bored of looking, he said, "It's enough for now. I am tired. Now, take that kerchief from him, then take him and throw him to the devs. Let them eat him," ordered Helen Beautiful to her servants. The servants took the lad and threw him to the place of devs. The devs jumped up to eat him. The lad said, "Wait, don't eat me, and I will grant you with my kindness." The devs held back from harming the lad. The lad took the second kerchief from his pocket, and suddenly a beautiful table with all kinds of food appeared in front of the devs. The devs were overjoyed. They sat and ate. There is much joy and play, and the devs are having a good time. Helen the Beautiful told her servants, "Look outside. The devs would have eaten the lad by now. Go and bring his head here. There is only one head missing in our 9-story palace that we have built with heads of slaughtered grooms. Bring his head and put it there." The servants looked down and saw that the lad was feasting together with the devs. They were playing, dancing, and entertaining themselves. Astounded servants told their mistress, "Dear mistress, the devs have not killed the lad. It looks like he had one more kerchief. See what he has done to our devs." "Now call him here and let's take that kerchief from him," ordered the mistress to her servants. They brought the lad back upstairs. "Now ask whatever you want for that kerchief," told Helen the Beautiful the lad.
Let me say one more word, dear mistress, said the lad.
Say two words, replied Helen the Beautiful.
Now, let me see your entire body under your waist, and I will give you my kerchief, said the lad. Helen the Beautiful and her servants let the lad fulfill his desire. Then they took his second kerchief and again threw him to those devs. The devs were happy to see the lad again. They thought another table full of food and drinks awaited them. And indeed, the lad took out the third kerchief from his pocket and spread another table in front of the devs. The devs ate and drank everything they wished. After a while, Helen the Beautiful told her servants, "Now, go take a look at our lad. Find out what he is doing with the devs." The servants looked and saw that the devs were so drunk that they could not recognize each other. The servants reported to their mistress, "Dear mistress, our lad, it seems, had another kerchief. He is having a feast and he is entertaining the devs." Helen the Beautiful, filled with happiness, and said, "God has sent somebody to take care of us." Then the servants brought back the lad to the mistress again. She told the lad, "Now, ask once more, what do you want me to give you in exchange of that kerchief?" "I will ask you one more word, dear mistress, if you let me do so," said the lad. "Say your word," replied Helen the Beautiful. The lad said, "Now, prepare your bed and let me lie down there. Tell your servants to hold you with carpets above me. If they can hold you all night until dawn, then cut my head. And if they can't, then you will fall down on me, and you will be mine, and I will be yours." Helen the Beautiful was very surprised by these words. She asked her servants, "How can we possibly do this?" The servant said, "Don't worry, dear mistress, we can easily hold you. It will be just one night. A man can survive in the skin of a wolf." "Now you know," replied Helen the Beautiful. The servants made a bed and let the lad lie down there. They held Helen the Beautiful above her bed. The lad lies there and thinks, "Oh, when will it be that Helen the Beautiful falls down?" And at the time of a rooster's crow, the poor servants could not hold their mistress any longer. One fell over to one side, the other one to the other, the third, the fourth, and Helen the Beautiful fell down into the bed where the lad was waiting for her. The lad said, "Now, embrace me, my dear. Why were you torturing me so if you knew you would be mine?" "No," replied Helen the Beautiful, "I can't touch you now. I have a godmother in the sky. First, I have to go and ask her, and then let it be that all of your heart's desires come true." The lad agreed. The young beauty got up and went to the sky to her godmother. Before leaving, she told the lad, "Here, take these keys. You can open all the doors except the 40th. On no account open that door, or you will regret it." "I listen to you, my dear. I will not open that door, and I will not break your word," promised the lad. The young lady got up and went to her godmother to the sky. She went up there and told her everything. Her godmother answered, "Why did you bother coming here to ask for my permission? You were destined to be his fate since the time you were born." So the young lady stood up and went to return back to the lad. Meanwhile, the lad went through all 39 doors and opened them. When he approached the 40th door, he remembered Helen's words, but still the temptation to open it overcame him. And as soon as he opened the door, two devs, Aslan and Kaplan, jumped up one from one corner and the other one from another. They told the lad,
"Oh, you son of a human! How did you appear here? What threw you to this part of the world? Help us. We are burning and blazing in flames. Sprinkle some drops of water at us, if you can. We will cause you no harm."
So the lad did. As soon as he sprinkled the water, in a second, this Aslan and Kaplan told the lad,
"Now, you lad, make way!"
The lad was hardly able to get out of their way when the devs suddenly took a deep breath and threw him and knocked him into the log beams. Aslan and Kaplan found their way out and ran. They came to the place of Helen the Beautiful, but could not find her there. Then they returned to the road, found Helen the Beautiful, kidnapped her, and disappeared. Time passed by, and Helen the Beautiful did not come back to the lad. He became worried. He went to Helen's servants and asked them why she was not coming back for such a long time.
"What did you do?" asked the servants the lad. "Did you open that door?"
"Yes, I did, but what could possibly happen?" replied the lad.
"Say yourself what happened," told the servants to him.
The lad said, "This is what I saw. There were some Aslan and Kaplan there. They almost killed me. They blew and threw me into the log beams. I spent an entire hour there and felt like crazy."
"Oh, poor you," said the servants to the lad. "It means that the devs took Helen the Beautiful and you will never see her again."
"Where could they possibly have gone?" asked the lad. The servants showed him the way.
"I am going to rescue her," said the lad.
So he stood up and left.
After a long or short journey, he looked at an open meadow and saw a large stone. He approached the stone, walked around it over and over. Then he looked at one side of the stone and noticed a small window. He looked down the window and saw Helen the Beautiful sitting there. Helen the Beautiful saw the lad and burst into tears. "Now, beautiful Helen, what are you waiting for? Come with me," said the lad. "How could I escape from here, you poor lad?" said Helen. "Who will open the door for me? Only the dev is able to open this door, and if he comes here, he will eat you and me together." "What can we do now?" said the lad. "Try to jump from the window, and I will catch you down here." Helen the Beautiful jumped, and the lad grabbed her hand and took her with him. The dev came home and shouted, "Where is the lady?" Then he mounted the horse and went after the lad and Helen. Soon he caught up with him and told the lad,
"Where are you taking my wife?"
"Where am I taking her? I am taking her home," replied the lad. "This one time I forgive you, but if you do this again, I will certainly cut your head," said the dev. Then he took Helen the Beautiful from the lad and brought her back. In the morning, the dev went hunting again. That morning, again, the lad went to Helen the Beautiful, and once more, he kidnapped her from the dev. The dev came home and saw that the lady was not there. He shouted to his horse, "Hey, horse, where is my lady?"
"Don't worry," said the horse. "Like yesterday, the lad couldn't escape and go too far. The lady is still close to this place."
The dev saddled his horse and mounted it, and soon he caught up the lad and Helen. He grabbed the young lady's hand and asked the lad,
"Where are you taking my wife?"
"Where am I taking her?" answered the lad.
"I am taking her to my home. Now, this is another favor to you, because you gave us water to cool when we were burning. If you repeat this again, I will not spare you any more,"
warned the dev, and took the young lady back with him. Again, for the third time, the lad came and kidnapped Helen the Beautiful from the dev. Again, for the third time, in the evening, the dev came home and saw that the lady was not there. The devil spat fire from his mouth. Then he took his horse from the stables, saddled it, sat on it, and went to find Helen. Midway, he caught up with the lad and grabbed his hand. He said,
"I have told you that there would not be a third time, and I will not spare you. 1, 2, and 3!
The dev struck the lad with his sword, cut his throat, and killed him.
"Oh," said the dev, "now that I have killed the enemy, I can walk with ease, even if I don't go to my wife for a week."
So the dev took the lady back to his home, and they started living together. Meanwhile, the eldest brother-in-law remembered the lad's words. He said to himself,
"Let me go and see the glass of milk that he left here, if it is still milk or if it has turned into blood by now."
He went and saw that the milk had turned into blood.
He sighed, "Oh, the lad gave me a sister and made me into a family man. And now I have a wife and children and I enjoy happiness of life while my brother-in-law is dead."
So the dev stood up and went to rescue the lad. He headed for the road, walked a little, and there he met another brother-in-law. He asked,
"Who are you, and where are you going?"
"Here is what happened," answered the stranger. "The milk turned into blood in my glass. My wife's brother died, and I have to find him."
"Oh, is it possible that I have another brother-in-law? I was not aware of it. I am also going to rescue my dead brother-in-law,"
said the dev, and together they continued on their way. So they went together. Here, they looked ahead and saw another dev coming. They asked,
"Where are you going with such speed?"
"Where?"
answered the third dev.
"My brother-in-law has been killed and I have to find him."
"Oh, man," said the first dev. "I didn't know we had one more brother-in-law. Now, let's hurry and go the three of us together. Perhaps we will find our wife's brother."
After a long or short journey, they came to an empty meadow, and here they saw the dead young man sliced into pieces. The devs recognized the brother-in-law. They approached him and started healing him with some remedies. They cured and revived the dead man. The lad rose and started rubbing his eyes.
"Oh, I slept a lot," he said.
Then they looked here and there and saw that Helen the Beautiful had disappeared. She was not there anymore. Immediately, the lad rushed in the direction of Helen the Beautiful was taken. The devs grabbed the lad with their hands and tried to stop him.
"Come back, man, and forget about Helen the Beautiful. How on earth can I stop if I don't find her?" replied the lad.
The dev said, "Come back, dear brother, or we will not be able to help you anymore. This one time we saved you, but know that we are not able to revive you the second time."
"How? Was I dead?" asked the lad.
"Yes, you were dead,"
answered the devs.
"You should not have given me my life back,"
said the lad, and went on his way. The devs returned to their homes. The lad went to rescue Helen the Beautiful. He walked along the road for a little while and here he saw that two dogs had found a piece of meat, and these two were fighting for it. The lad told the dogs, "Wait, don't fight for the meat." Then he took a knife from his pocket and cut the meat. He gave one half to one dog and another half to the other. The dogs calmed down and told the lad, "God bless you, son of a human, for such kindness. Here, take our hare, and wherever you're in trouble, mention our names." The lad took the piece of hare and continued on his way. On the road, he saw that hens had found some grains of barley and did not let each other have them. When the lad saw this, he told the hens, "Why are you fighting?" Then he took the grains of barley, divided them in half, and gave them to each hen. The hens also became quiet. They said, "God bless you, lad, for saving us from this trouble. Here, take our feather, and wherever you need our help, just mention our names and we will be useful to you." The lad took the feather, put it in his pocket, and continued on his way. He walked for a while, and here he saw a rose bush on the road, and bees buzzing and fighting with each other over the roads. "Why are you fighting?" asked the lad. "Here, one of you, sit on one branch and on the other, on another branch," he told the bees. Then the bees obeyed the lad, quietly sat on the branches of the rose bush, and told him, "God bless you, son of a human, for saving us from this uproar, because you were so kind to us. Here, take our fuzz, and mention our names wherever you are in trouble, and we will appear in front of you." The lad took the fuzz, put it into his pocket, and continued on his way. He walked for a while and entered a village. Here he came to one old woman's house and asked her, "Mother, would you accept a guest from God?" "Why not, my son?" said the old woman. "Not only a guest, but I need a workman in my house, if you will." "With great pleasure, my mother," agreed the lad. "I will show you my workmanship. Then I will give you 3 tasks, my son, and if you are able to fulfill them, I will keep you here as a servant," said the old woman. The lad agreed. The old woman said, "Now, I will put a large bowl of pilaf on the stove for you, and let's see if you can eat it." So the old woman cooked the pilaf for the lad and gave him to it to eat. The lad started eating. He is exhausted from hunger. He eats the pilaf like a wolf. The old woman stands and stares at him and thinks to herself, "What is he doing? Let his family fall in ruins? He eats so fast." Meanwhile, after the lad ate a little, he already became full. He did not want to eat any more and did not know what to do. Then he told the old woman, "My mother, go to your room if you can. I am ashamed of you staring at me while I am eating." "Well, my son," said the woman, "I will go away." The old woman left. The lad could not eat any longer. He said, "How can I possibly escape this place so that the old woman does not kill me? Perhaps those dogs that I met on the road could help me." He took the hare out of his pocket, mentioned the names of the dogs, and suddenly countless dogs appeared in front of the lad. The dogs asked, "What is going on, our brother? What kind of trouble are you in?" The lad told him, "Here is my trouble. This sly old woman gave me this much pilaf to eat. How can I eat so much? So you have to help me." Instantly, the dogs fell upon the pilaf and started eating. When they were done, they started fighting with each other. The lad said, "For God's sake, don't make too much noise here, or that sly old woman will hear and slaughter you and me together." The dogs disappeared. The old woman came back and saw that the lad was rubbing his spoon against the bottom of the empty bowl. The lad complained to the woman, "You dear woman, why didn't you cook a little bit more so I could eat properly and enjoy it and be satisfied with this delicious pilaf?" The old woman was surprised and said in her heart, "Oh, I am a sly, but this young man seems even cleverer than I am." "Well done, my son," told the woman to the lad. "You fulfilled one task. Now, for the second task." The old woman sowed the seeds of barley plowed during the day and told the lad, "You have to take all these seeds from the ground. If I even find one seed left on the ground, I will cut off your head." The lad started picking up the seeds. Poor lad almost broke his neck while picking the seeds. He told the woman, "Go if you can. I am ashamed of you. I would have picked these seeds up by now if you were not here staring at me." "I agree, my son. Well, I will leave you to pick up the seeds," said the old woman. As soon as she left, the lad called the hens. Immediately, the hens appeared in front of him. "What is happening, our brother? What kind of trouble are you in?" asked the hens. "There can't be more trouble than this one. Death awaits me," said the lad, and then told his worries to the hens. Immediately, the hens fell upon the barley seeds and quickly picked them up and collected everything in front of the lad. When the hens were done, the lad said, "Now, you have to leave, because if that sly woman comes back and sees you here, our days will become dark." The hens returned to the place from which they came. The old woman came back. The lad jumped here and there as he was picking up the barley seeds. When the old man saw her task fulfilled, she was surprised and said, "Oh, how could he possibly accomplish this task?" The lad told her, "God bless you, woman. why didn't you sow more seeds for me, so I could be satisfied with picking them up? Well done, my son. You fulfilled the second task, too. Now, go inside, eat the dinner, and take the horses to graze. In the evening, when you come back, if even one horse is missing, know that I will cut your head, said the old woman. The lad agreed, and went inside the house to eat the dinner. Meanwhile, the sly woman went to the stable to the horses and told them, Now, dear horses, go to the meadow and get lost there, so that the lad is not able to bring you back home in the evening. I am asking especially you, my white horse, to go behind and jump behind 9 mountains, so nobody except God is able to find you. The lad went to the stables and took the horses to the meadow. He drove the herd of horses to the end of the village to a small wooded shore. The horses start grazing on the grass. The lad lies down but tries to not fall asleep. The horses are watching the lad, so once he falls asleep, they will run away, as the sly old woman told them to do. The lad looked at the horses and said, I shall take a nap. Where can these horses possibly go? He fell asleep. The horses went and disappeared without a trace. The white horse, which was a winged horse, crossed 9 mountains and lay down in such a place where even the devil would not be able to find it. After a long or short sleep, the lad woke up. It was dark already. He looked here and there, but could not find anything except one old lame horse. He ran around a lot with a trembling heart, but could not find the horses. He stands there and does not know what to do. Then he wished, Oh, let those bees come here and help me. He took the fuzz and mentioned the bees' names. Immediately, countless bees appeared around the lad. They asked, What is happening, dear brother? What kind of trouble are you in? There can't be more trouble than this. I took 60 horses to the meadow, and I have to take them back to their owner. But they disappeared, and I can't find any horses except for this one, said the lad. Now, we will help you, dear brother. Don't be afraid, said the bees, and immediately they spread all over the world. Here they found those horses and fell upon them and bit on their sides, so that the horses ran back home from pain and bitterness. So the bees gathered 59 horses, and only one remained missing. Soon, the bees found the missing horse, too, behind 9 mountains and brought it back to the woman. Now, you go in front and call the old woman to open the door. Let her know that her horses are coming, told the beast the lad. The lad ran in front and shouted, Mother, open the door! The woman opened the doors, counted her horses, and when she discovered that none of them was missing, she was greatly astonished. She thought, This lad will do me some harm. It is better I get rid of him. She told the lad, My son, go inside and eat some dinner. Then come out, choose a horse you like, take it and go home to your parents. The lad went inside to eat the dinner. Meanwhile, the old woman went to the stable and asked the white horse, You perished horse, I told you to go and get lost behind 9 mountains so that the lad could not find you. The horse answered, Your trouble's to me, dear woman. He stabbed us with some arrows so that blood came out of our wounds, wherever his arrows pierced our bodies. So what could I do? I immediately ran back home. Then the woman hit and hit this white horse with her stick so that she almost removed the skin from it. The old sly woman wants the lad to dislike this horse so he does not take the horse with him. The lad ate the dinner and came out. There came some stranger woman and told the lad, My son, when you go to the stables, you will see a white horse standing in the right corner. The skin hangs on that horse because of beatings. You don't need anything else. Just take that horse with you. The lad went inside the stable. The sly old woman told him, Now, dear son, choose the horse you like. I can't break my promise. The lad walked back and forth as if he did not like any of the horses. The sly woman asked, Dear son, why don't you like the horses? Look how beautiful and fat they are. Take the one you wish. Give me this weak horse. I will sit and ride slowly, said the lad. No, my son, what is the use of that frail horse? It will die somewhere on the road, replied the sly woman. I will only take that weak horse, repeated the lad. Well, my son, take it and let her tongue become a stone in her mouth. Whoever taught you about that horse? The lad took the horse out of the stable, saddled it, and mounted, then hit it with his whip. The horse told the lad, Why do you hit me, and who are you that you hit me? Then the horse took him high into the sky, so the sun could burn the lad there, but he managed to place himself under the horse. Then the horse started descending down to the ground, but again the lad managed to sit on the horseback. Now the horse went sideways to smash the lad on the cliffs, but he managed to sit on one or another side of the horse. Then the horse told the lad, Good for you, lad. I am old already and never have seen a rider like you. At least I will serve you during my old days. Tell me, where do you want me to take you? I want to go to Helen the Beautiful, if you know where she lives, said the lad. The horse rushed and raced. Here they came to one cliff. This cliff would open and close. The horse told the lad, Hit me with your whip so hard that my skin breaks. Otherwise, we will slam into this cliff and both of us will die. The lad hit so hard that the horse flew from bitterness. One's eye could not catch her, but still two of her hairs got caught in the cliff. "Don't be afraid, lad," said the horse. "We have survived. We only lost two hairs, but there will be no harm from it." The horse and the rider walked and passed through the place where Helen the Beautiful lived. As soon as the lad saw Helen at the window, he called her. "Now, Helen the Beautiful, we have to go. The enemies can no longer do us any harm." The lad seated Helen the Beautiful together with him on the horseback, and they ran. The Dev came home and asked, "Where is Helen the Beautiful? Where has she gone?" His horse answered, "I will come with you, but cannot help you anymore. You will not be able to return the lady back." The Dev still headed to the road and almost caught up with the lad. The white horse asked the lad, "Take a look at me and tell me, is anyone coming after us?" As soon as the lad looked back, something the size of a fly appeared. After a while, he looked back again, and he noticed something like a fire flame behind. The Dev was catching up with them. The lad called his horse, "Hurry up! The Dev and his horse are catching up with us!" "What can the lad's horse do? She is already very old." "The lad's horse is the mother of the Dev's horse." So the lad's horse turns back to the Dev's horse and says, "Let your mother's breast milk be righteous for you. I have raised you. Now I am old, and you are still young. You know that I will not be able to escape you. Go, take that Dev high to the sky and throw him down so that he disappears deep into the ground and his filthy smell does not come out from there." The Dev's horse laughed, and he took the Dev high into the sky, threw him down to the ground, and the Dev died. The Dev's horse came down from the sky and approached the lad. The lad sat Helen the Beautiful on the back of the Dev's horse. They came to the lad's palace. The wedding continued for 7 days and 7 nights, and they lived pleasantly ever after. Trouble there, joy here.
Gamarjova, and welcome to part 2 of Myth 6, The Tale of Helen the Beautiful. Joining me today is one of my good friends, Elspeth, who is fantastic as an archivist. I'm not going to say where, because that is up to them if they want to say anything. And they're, so just some information, they're an archivist and they love folk tales. So I wanted to bring them on the show to kind of discuss some folk tales and some themes that they look at, and also thank them for being an archivist, because they do all the unseen work that we need to do research here. So welcome, Elspeth.
You're very welcome. I am an archivist. I work at a university in the Western US, mostly with contemporary collections, but my first love was books. And I keep trying to find ways to get back to book projects, like looking into whether books have toxic bindings. So that's always exciting.
Yeah, be careful with that. As long as you don't lick the binding, right?
Yeah, do not lick the archives. That is frowned upon.
Generally, I think.
Yeah, just generally.
But anyways, yeah, so I brought you here to talk about the tale of Helen the Beautiful. So yeah. My first question is, what were your thoughts on the story?
My first thoughts were a mix of things. So I should say that I am not a folktale scholar, but I am an amateur folktale scholar. I've been interested in fairy tales and folklore for pretty much my entire life, having been exposed to a bunch of different culture collections in my home growing up. And so my first thoughts reading this, first, as I messaged you while reading it, some questions about the translation. It is, you know, I was curious to know whether some of the quirks of the language were just to do with the translator, or whether they were standard formats for storytelling, because different cultures have different ways of telling a story. The other thought I had was that, boy, this feels really familiar. And I spent a while trying to figure out where I'd read a story that was very like this one before. And I did figure it out, actually. I figured out exactly which one this is.
Okay, which one is it?
It's Maria Morevna.
Oh, yeah.
It has some different elements, but it's very, very similar to the Russian folktale Maria Morevna, also known as Kostyei the Deathless.
Yeah, that does make more sense. I love the tale of Kostyei Bessmertny.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I can see that now that you mention it.
Yeah.
I was like, this sounds really familiar, but I'm just going to keep reading because I'm tired.
Yeah.
And then just to come talk about the translation thing, I was reading in the actual book. The author wanted to be as close to the language as possible.
So maybe some of these are storytelling formats.
Yeah. So these are like, they like went around on this massive research project trying to find all these stories from like mountain villages and kind of just going around to like different places and collecting these stories and then translating them to English. So it's just wild that like, yeah, sometimes the grammar just looks a bit off
And that's mostly because it's like, well, they're translating it directly from the language. They're not like trying to change anything, because then the story loses some sense of what it is. And it makes it a bit harder to understand, but it keeps like the flow going, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it connects it more closely to the original oral tradition, which most folktales come from. Do you happen to know when this storytelling effort, the collections were done and when the translations were done?
You know, I don't recall. I know who the translator is, though. So it's Professor Shorina Kurtsikidze. She's somewhere in California. I forget which university, but it's one of them out there.
Yeah, plenty to choose from.
Plenty to choose from. But I thank her every time I read a myth from this book. So
yeah. With stories that get translated, or any text that gets translated, the historical context of the translator is a layer within the story. So my academic background is in history, and I have long been interested in cultural history, and the thing with folktales is that they do reflect the social norms and the values of a particular moment in that culture. And you can understand things. I mean, I've been working on catching up to the podcast Saga Thing, which is Icelandic sagas. And one of the things they talk about a lot is both the way that these are oral traditions potentially from, you know, like 10th, 11th century Iceland, but they're also coming through the lens of 13th century Christian Iceland. And so those are sort of layers of interpretation and understanding for the original audiences. And so the thing, translation is very similar to that, because, you know, if this is a Soviet era translation, for instance, maybe that's a little bit different than a post-Soviet translation. They're emphasizing different things.
Yeah, it's post-Soviet for sure. So So yeah, they're probably emphasizing different things, which is, I think, why they tried to getting as close as possible to the language.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to preserve that Georgian culture there, which I think is actually pretty fantastic, that they're trying to make it easier for someone to, like, you know, who knows Georgian, be able to actually read the story and understand what's going on and know what words most closely match. Because if you have someone who speaks Georgian, but they're not native translating, it makes it a lot more different than, you know, Shorina Kurtsikidze, who is native, and she's translating this into English for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She understands the nuances better.
Exactly. It's like if I was translating something from like English to Russian, I could understand the nuances from why I picked this word in Russian compared to that word, because I know what the context is in English. But if I did the reverse, I'd be totally lost. Yeah. So it's like, oh God. But yeah, so that's kind of answering your two questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always something to consider.
Yeah. And like my thoughts on it were, I really enjoyed the story. It was a nice, quick story.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of surprised about how non-violent the main character was.
Yeah, it makes a nice change.
Yeah. It's like, oh, he tries to be witty, but didn't work out for him often.
Yeah. Well, that's true of a lot of us.
Yeah.
It's very relatable.
It's very relatable, which I kind of did enjoy. It was like, oh, yeah, he totally messed that up. I think I would have too.
Yeah.
But, oh, so let's go into one of the themes I had. So the first one, which you see right off the bat, opening page, is women having no say in anything.
Yeah, well, it's not exactly novel.
Yeah. But I think it's something that needs to be addressed, because it's like, you have, you know, this dev, which I've explained in previous episodes, but for those who are new, a dev is basically like this big ogre being with 1 to 3 heads. So they're like a supernatural being. And in the first myth we read, the tale of Amiran, he actually kills all but 3 devs. So yeah, he's a bit of a character.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not thrilled that, so the sisters of the main character just kind of get handed off to the various devs who come by and say like, yeah, I want to marry the princess. And they get handed off in turn, even though the 2 older brothers have said no. The younger brother just sort of wanders in, gets a sister, and hands her off. Apparently, going by the text, I mean, it doesn't even sound like they have real weddings. You're just kind of like, here, have a woman. I mean, it's not my favorite trope of fairy tales and folklore, but it's pretty common throughout history. And it's also true of, like I was saying, with historical context, it's probably true of the actual women in that culture, in sort of the older eras. And it just, it really reflects that, you know, arranged marriage tradition.
Yeah, it's a very patriarchal culture there. So yeah. It's like, it's one of those things like, yeah, you know, this happened. Luckily, it's changing nowadays, but it's a thing that, you know, back in the day, and especially throughout history, women were just basically like, yep, you're being married off to this person who you have no idea about. So
the interesting part of that whole segment of the story to me was that the youngest brother was able to override his elder brother's decisions on that particular point. Because you would think that in a patriarchal culture, there would also be the age element of it, that the oldest brother would have the final say. And that's more commonly what I'm used to. Then again, in folklore, you often see that the youngest brother of three, because there are a lot of threes in this story, that the youngest brother is usually the one that has the story told about him.
Yeah, I think because the youngest brother is the one who usually has to go out and make their own wealth, basically.
Yeah.
So they have to make things happen because they just don't naturally inherit things from their family. So they have to go out and make things work. And then I've actually made that note to Brendan so many times, like, why are there so many threes everywhere? But it could also be, like, the trope of having threes could just be relating to, like, the Holy Trinity or something.
Yeah, or as we say in my family's Passover Seders, why do you have three matzahs on the Seder plate so you can have one in the middle?
Yeah. And it's like my favorite, you know, German drinking saying is, like, you know, you can't have one drink, so you need to have two because you have two legs to stand on. But if you have three, you can sit down on the stool. I keep drinking. So,
culturally, do you have any idea why they would allow the youngest brother in the story to be able to override the eldest brother's decisions? Because the eldest brother says no to these marriages.
And then the middle brother says no, but everyone forgets about the middle brother. But I actually don't know culturally. I think it just kind of one of those like narrative tropes where the brother never said no to like that never, because you never see a scene where the elder and middle brother are telling the younger brother, don't do this. It's just kind of, they go up, they see the Devi. Devi says, let me marry your sister. They're like, no. Next one comes up, no. Last one, younger brother's like, yeah, sure, why not? And then it's also kind of like classic folktale. It leads to something in the future that helps him out later.
Yeah. So have you read any of the Marjorie Wardrop Scott Georgian folktale book at all? I found it on Project Gutenberg, and there is a story that's very similar to this.
Yeah, I own it. I haven't read it yet. I have like three copies of it. It's because people keep gifting it to me.
Yeah. So in that version of the story, they give a lot more on the preamble, what I can almost say the preamble to the story, which is this whole bit about guarding the father's grave. Which is kind of wild, and it gets, it's honestly kind of confusing. But then the rest of the story is like three paragraphs. I was like, okay, so that's what we're focusing on? Right. Interesting.
So I think this is why I picked this one, because this one was a bit more fleshed out.
Yeah.
Because I was looking and like, oh, that's okay. And then there's that one. I have not read the Marjorie Wardrop version translation. I own it. I just haven't gotten around to it because it's like, I like the one I'm reading right now substantially better.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because it has like more regions in it, so it's like, well, this one's, you know, easier to handle too. But
so what context do you have for this story in terms of background, where it's from, anything like that?
You know, honestly, I just know it's from Georgia. I think it's, I don't know, they didn't say what region it was from. Literally, it's just that the whole book is just like, here's stories back to back with no like separation by region. So I'm guessing just one of those like traditional stories you hear around the area that people, you know, tell their children and everything. But honestly, I have no other clue about where it's from, what region. I think it's probably from Svaneti, because that's usually where like most of the stories take place, which is like near the, Svaneti's like near the Abkhazia region.
Okay.
So yeah, it's like,
I'm bad at geography. You're going to need to narrow that down.
Okay, so Svaneti is like northern Georgia.
Okay.
So like, so basically Georgia has like a weird shape. So it's like Svaneti would be like right here.
Yeah, for those who cannot see this traditionally visual medium of podcasting, Roberto is showing me a tattoo on his forearm.
Yep, which I used to show people Georgian geography all the time.
I mean, it's a handy reference tool. I think I read somewhere that Adam Savage has made measurement, like ruler tattoos, like the temporary tattoos with rulers that you can put on your forearm that you can use to like measure stuff if you're working.
Yeah, I just really like having the, like, oh yeah, whereabouts in Georgia have you been? I've been here and here. Like, I just know where it is. Okay, leave me alone.
So I did dig into the Arne Thompson Utter Folklore and Fairy Tale Type Index, because I am a nerd and I take any excuse to go explore reference books because I love that. Encyclopedias. As far as I can tell, this one is closest to type 302, which is described as the ogre's heart and the egg. Now, this particular story doesn't have that aspect of it. That part is much more closely related to Koschei the Deathless, where his mm-hmm. his life is stored outside his body, so he can't, that's why he can't be killed.
Like a phylactery.
Yeah, but this one in particular has a motif called magic help. The hero receives magic help from grateful animals for whom he has made an equitable division of food, and from his brothers-in-law. In this case, the brothers-in-law are often portrayed as animals, although in this story they are in charge Devi. Of animals.
Yeah, the brothers-in-law are like his Devi, or the Devi, and then there's other animals that you see later on.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because you literally have like, I'm going to meet my three brothers-in-laws, and then help three animals, and then story finishes.
Yeah, and three tests with the princess, or with Helen, and three tests with the witch, and yeah. Mm-hmm. And three tries to get her away from her kidnapper, and yeah.
Yeah, that's, so he has three, and he has three exams, basically, to go through.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh my god, this guy's just working in threes. Threes, always coming back.
Yep, it's very, very common.
Is that like a trope in like most folklore? Or
oh yeah, or? Threes and sevens are all over the place. It's not just Christian traditions. Okay. It's all over.
Yeah, I know the sevens appear a lot in like Zoroastrianism yeah. and like paganism and Armaziism in Georgia. So it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, Armaziism is the pagan belief of Georgia. They worship the pagan god Armazi. So there's a lot of sevens there. But we don't know a lot about it because the Christians managed to stamp that out really well.
Yeah, Christianity's good at that, yeah. She says, as a non-Christian. But yes, no, threes are all over the place. I mean, in pagan cultures in Western Europe, I mean, you see the three-part goddess a lot. You know, mm-hmm. maiden, mother, crone. And yeah, it's all over.
Yeah. And then, as I mentioned earlier, my favorite thing was like the middle child always being forgotten.
Oh yeah, he's mentioned like twice and then you never hear about him again. Of course, you never really hear about the eldest brother either. Just that the brothers-in-law don't like the two eldest brothers.
Yeah, because it's like you hear the elder brother mentioned like, oh yeah, it doesn't give away the you know, the brother, the sister. But then it's like the middle brother is like just a passing reference. Like, oh, he also went to the middle brother said no, okay, younger brother, yeah. And then you get to the middle sister, who's completely ignored as well,
yeah.
So you don't even see, like, oh yeah, he went to see his elder sister, and then he went to see his middle sister, same thing happened, and then he went to see his younger sister, and it's like, the middle child, as often, forgotten.
Yeah, the eldest sister actually gets speaking lines.
I know, which is surprising sometimes.
Yeah.
So. The Jordans are good about that, you know, giving women speaking lines, even though it's like the one time.
You know, it's not that long a story. I'll take what I can get.
It's 11 pages, I think. Yeah. It's not too, or 11 pictures at least. It's like one of those trips. I just thought it was kind of funny. It's like the middle child is forgotten. And then, we're really going through the themes I picked really quick. And then just like the random challenges people face in folklore that don't relate to the story at all until the very end, because it's like when he's like doing the thing for the witch, it's like, why did you see some random witch in the woods, or some random old lady, whatever she is, and it's like, okay, you need to do these three tasks, and it's like, but I also met these random animals on the road who, like, you can help, if you call me, I can help you, and it's like, why can't you just go straight there? What's going on?
Well, he needs the flying horse, who apparently can talk.
The flying horse who can talk. But it's a very old horse. You have to basically abuse the poor thing to make it fly.
Oh, I know, poor baby.
I know. And apparently it was like the horse that was following him was like his horse's son or daughter.
Yeah.
Which I was like, what?
That was a convenient bit of coincidence.
I know, wasn't it? It's like, oh, they're also related? Like, what is this?
I mean,
like,
a small community, I suppose.
It is a small community. I mean, to be fair, you get to meet a lot of people who know each other in Georgia, because it was like, I have these two friends, Becca and Gavanza, great people, they were on the show, and every time I talk to somebody, it's like, oh yeah, I know Becca and Gavanza, they're teaching me Georgian, I'm like, what? And I'm like, how do you know this? Like, yeah, we live in Tbilisi, everyone knows each other. Like, it's the biggest city in the area.
I have a coworker who's like that. Her family's been in this town for like four or five generations, and she knows like two-thirds of the local population, it seems like.
Oh my gosh. It makes it hard to do anything. It's like, is there anything that you wanted to like kind of talk about that as you were reading, or did we just kind of cover everything?
I mean, we pretty much covered the thoughts I had about the story directly, but this has gotten me sort of going back into a rabbit hole that I've visit on regular occasions. And I even did an independent study in college on folk tales and fairy tales as historical documents, which was really fun.
Ooh, let's hear about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was able, the university that I went to has an overseas studies program in Oxford in England. And one of the things that you do is you do an Oxford style tutorial, which is a one-on-one, proposing your course is part of how you apply to the program. And I was just early enough in terms of years. I mean, I'm not that old. I'm 35, but my undergraduate time was still right sort of on the early edge of the real move towards interdisciplinary work that we're seeing much more of these days. And I went into college thinking I was a cultural anthropology major, and it was a class on Central Asian folklore that kind of told me maybe this is not my thing actually. And I ended up with history, but I was still interested in how these stories can work as historical texts. Mm-hmm. And my department was not thrilled by this as an option. They kept telling me that was an English class, which, no, I'm not doing literary analysis. I'm using these as historical documents. It's no different from art history, really. It's just text instead of a visual medium. And so I used the 6 months, the 2 terms I spent at Oxford to do this kind of study, because when else was I going to get to? And I had a great time. You know, my homework for 1 week would be, like 6 different versions of Little Red Riding Hood. And I would look at sort of the way the story has progressed over the years. And that one's actually one of my favorite examples to bring up, because one of the earliest identified versions of Little Red Riding Hood as the story we know is from like the 15th, 16th century. It's called The Tale of the Grandmother. And we're used to the Brothers Grimm interpretation of Little Red Riding Hood. It's a morality story. It's about not trusting strangers. It's about virginity and purity and the young female. The tale of the grandmother, she is a trickster figure, the girl. She basically, a lot of the same story points, she goes to her grandmother's in the woods and there's a wolf and all that good stuff. But when she gets to her grandmother's house and finds the wolf there instead of her grandmother, she basically does a striptease for the wolf, gets into bed with him, and then escapes by saying she has to go outside and relieve herself, and then runs home in the nude, which is not the story that we're used to.
I am flabbergasted.
Yeah. So I don't know if, I'm sure that the guys who do Grimm reading cover this kind of stuff, because I haven't gotten to that one yet. It's on my want to listen list, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Mine's also long, don't worry.
Yeah. The famous author J.R.R. Tolkien,
never heard of him.
Gonna come up eventually. he's this weird, Anglo-Saxon scholar at Oxford. Roberto is wearing a Hobbit t-shirt. he wrote an essay that has stuck with me ever since doing this tutorial in my overseas studies program. It's called On Fairy Stories.
I like that one.
And the main thrust of the essay is that these stories were not originally for children, that they moved into the nursery as a result of the Enlightenment in the 18th century, because before then, they were entertainment for everybody. And if you read the pre-Enlightenment versions of a lot of these stories, I describe them as medieval HBO. They're dirty, they're violent, they're full of things that we would not want children to learn, and they're not about morality stories. They are purely entertainment. They may reinforce cultural norms and cultural standards, but that's not the primary goal. We today, people who watch like Disney versions of fairy tales and stuff will talk about how the Grimm brothers, they're so dark and, it's appropriately named. Their last name was Grimm, but they really toned it down is the thing.
Yeah.
The tale of the grandmother is much more like reading Brer Rabbit than Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, and that actually got me thinking about something else that happened in The Tale of Helen the Beautiful. The fact that basically the younger brother essentially made Helen show him her
bits.
Her bits?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was literally reading, I'm like, wait, did she just let him see like everything underneath there or something?
Yeah. Yeah, he at one point asks to see everything below her waist.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude.
He's been cursed to basically be obsessed with her because he broke somebody's water jug by accident.
There's a lot of water jug breaking in Caucasian stories. Like, I think the last myth we covered, which was Warkag's sons, which is an Ossetian tale. Literally, like, Orkhag's grandson breaks a water jug, and then the daughter of, like, this, like, person, who, this seeress, she tells her daughter, hey, you're part of my blood. Just go tell them off, because you know what's in their future. And it's like, and the daughter goes back, it's like, ha, you guys can't even take care of your grandfather who's out in the woods. And it's like our grandfather's
ooh, burn.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you pick on me, a small bird, defenseless bird, but you can't even take care of your own grandfather. Come on. It was actually quite a burn.
This story was definitely hornier than I was expecting.
Yeah, same. I actually didn't read it before I sent it to you. I just saw the I just rolled a dice and I picked that title. I'm like, well, that's the story I'm reading. So, because you were asking me questions. I'm like, oh, I didn't know there were Debbie in this story. I'm like, oops, I should probably read this now.
Yeah, you know, you got to do your homework.
Yeah, I'm really bad about reading the stories until like the last minute. I will research all day, but like the moment I like have to read a story, like I'll just read it when I actually have to read it for the podcast.
It's yeah, like, I mean, if you do that, you could just like sort of record your natural reactions along with.
Sometimes I do, and I'm like, oh my god. I think I edited it out because I just couldn't stop laughing at with one of the stories, but it was just like I had to facepalm a few times, and I'm like, oh my god, yeah. Why is this happening? I think it was Amiran, probably. It's just crazy. But
so, do you notice similarities between this and other stories that you've read for the show?
So like usually, so similarity wise, it's always because the last one I read that's similar to this is The Sun's Daughter, and it's this man who's like, who works for a king, and like he was given this like magic ring that lets him pop food out whenever he wants.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Like basically he did a lot of work. So like he got this magic ring that lets him gives him anything he wishes. Usually he uses it for food. And then it was like, but now, and then in this story, you see like a handkerchief that like creates food if you're hungry, whatever food you want. And I'm like, that'd be so nice. I'd probably gain like all the pounds because I'll just be like, give me the healthiest and most delectable khachapuri ever.
is healthy khachapuri an oxymoron?
Yeah, it's bread. It's bread, cheese, and egg. I think the egg's the healthy.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's not.
I see no problem with this.
I see nothing. No problem with this. I literally will devour that by myself. Like if you ever find my pictures of when I was in Georgia, you'll see that I ate a khachapuri that was bigger than my head.
Wow.
By myself, it's a shared food. I ate it by myself because I'm a glutton. I went out to a Georgian restaurant with some friends during Memorial Day weekend, and we ordered khachapuri, and they're like, oh, let's get some. And I was like already like going for like my fifth piece. I'm like, and they're on their second. I'm like, yeah, you know, or piece number six time. So yeah, I'm a bit of a glutton for Georgian food, which is why, and I will just keep ordering for the table until you stop me. So I run up bills at Georgian places. Like, I think the last one was like, to be fair, it was eight people, but it was like $200. And we were like, oh my God, what did Roberto do with all this wine?
I mean, for eight people, that's not bad.
It's not bad until you find out it wasn't a lot of food.
Yeah.
It was mostly wine and mostly khachapuri.
Sounds good to me.
It was great. And for those of you
cheese,
wondering,
cheese, carbs, wine. Sounds like
yeah. Great. And I'm currently drinking Georgian wine right now. So, or I did. I just hopped it. I just finished it. Anyways, yeah. And like, this is a very horny story.
Yeah. Yeah. It really was.
This guy is obsessed with this poor woman. To be fair, he saved her from her kidnapper, but it was basically to, like, marry her.
Yeah, but before then, it doesn't sound like she was actually that interested in marriage, because she was like, let's cut his head off and add it to the other suitors' heads. You know, finish building our tower.
I thought that was a great power move on her part. Yeah. Like, yeah, just like, you know, send him to the rest of the Devi, and like, they'll take care of him. Yeah. I'm like, damn, Helen, you're doing great. And then yeah. It was like, and then she was like, oh, I'm going to go out. I'm going to talk to my goddess. Don't open this door. And of course, you know what? I think I'm going to open that door. No problem yeah. at all. Then the guy, you know, opens the door, literally causes the guy to die.
Yeah.
Like
but he gets revived. Like, so everything's okay.
Yeah. I'm like, I wish I had Debbie brother-in-laws to revive me when things go wrong. Like,
yeah, but they can only do it once. They say specifically they can only do it once. That he's got to be more careful next time. Don't get sliced into bits by an angry dev.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, at least you can do it once. Imagine, like, oh no, I died. Oh well, my brothers can help me now. Resurrected. Yeah. Oh man,
but all I can definitely see this story being told, you know, to like, you know, among like 20 somethings with alcohol. And
totally.
You know, probably various versions of it would get into very detailed descriptions of how Helen looks below the waist.
Yeah, I can.
This seems like a very boy story.
It's a man story, yeah. Toxic
nature.
No, boy story.
Not man, boy.
Boy, yeah. I can see that. Because you don't know how young the younger brother is, too. So it's like...
No, and I do spend a lot of my time around college students.
I do, too. So...
Yeah.
To be fair, I just was one 4 years ago. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're a baby. I forget sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, man.
This story reminds me a lot of sort of that age range where... Your body is an adult. Your brain's not quite there yet. They say that the part of your brain that understands consequences doesn't fully finish maturing until your mid-20s. And I definitely see that along the way.
Yeah, I think the younger brother is probably in his mid-20s. Because it's like...
I was pegging at him at like maybe 18, 19.
I can see that too. Because it's like, well, literally it's like the dev's like, if you come back, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And he goes back and tries to save Helen the exact same way each time. It's like, it didn't work the last time. Why are you going to try it this time? Like, dude, come on. Be smarter.
Like, well, he's and like, also, just like, yes, I will indeed give all three of my sisters to large, multi-headed, ogre-type creatures that my other brothers have rejected. Sure. That seems okay. If I go visit them, might eat me. All right.
Yeah.
Good thinking, dude.
And you saw the pictures I sent you of what they might look like.
Yeah.
Handsome are they? So
which head do you kiss at the ceremony?
Yes, the one you like best, I think.
Do they get jealous of each other, the different heads?
I don't think so. I think they're all this. I think they all speak in the same voice. It's like the or it could be the knight to say knee.
Yeah.
Oh, we got finally have a Monty Python reference. Finally. I was just thinking the knight to say knee because there's one picture that they do have three heads.
Yeah.
But they all look different because there's like this one that Amiran fights who's basically dragon-like, and it's like, okay, and it's the Devi are basically just mostly like Zoroastrian Devi, but more with a Georgian flavor.
Mm-hmm.
They're like drinking, they're like eating, especially people, but it kind of goes back to like Xenophon's, like, these guys are cannibals. And because he basically went to like a Georgian village and it was like, yeah, these guys are cannibals, they're kind of crazy. They fought, they lost, and then instead of surrendering, they jumped off the mountain cliff and killed themselves.
That's a choice.
And along with the women and children. So they were just, the Greeks are just horrified.
Yeah, although you'd think that they would appreciate a culture that would choose suicide. Because, I mean, a lot of the ancient cultures did.
Don't you know that all they said to the Greeks was bar, 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 bar?
Yeah, that's where we got barbarian.
Yep. Always love mentioning that. Well, and any final thoughts that you have about the story before we wrap up?
I didn't know that Helen was a Georgian name.
Helen isn't a Georgian name.
So I'm assuming this is the a translation of the name. What do you think the name would have been? I mean, what's the analog in Georgian?
So probably be Elena, but it's because it's Greek and the Georgians are very influenced by the Greeks. Like throughout
I was wondering if this was going to be a Helen of Troy tie-in.
No, it's just... like, the Georgians and the Greeks have been together for, like, a long time. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, they have similar names. And, like, Helen's just, like, a predominant Georgian name because they're Orthodox, which is a name you see often in Orthodoxy. So, yeah, it's just Helen. And she's the only named character, too. So
Yeah, that was weird. I didn't notice that until you just said it.
Yeah, Helen's the only named character, which I find kind of cool. It's like, yeah, the woman who's very, you know, who has a castle, kills all her suitors... the only named character, and then the young lad comes in and screws everything over for her.
Yeah, because he's under a spell.
Because apparently the old lady was, you look too handsome, so let's put you under a spell instead, under a curse. It looks like looks can save you from getting killed by old ladies.
Yeah, maybe the moral of the story is watch out for old women.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch where you're shooting your arrows.
Honestly, that's a big trope in Caucasian stories to begin with.
I mean, it's not a bad message.
Literally, you have in Warthog and his sons, the Ascetian tale, Oxartog, the younger twin, shoots an arrow at a random place because he sees a light, hears a scream, and he just shot his aunt in the eye.
Ooh.
She fixed it. She was blind in one eye, but he fixed it.
I mean, the breaking of water vessels is actually something that shows up as a motif in this reference book.
Really?
Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't know, but it makes sense. I mean, so many ancient cultures, I mean, before you get running water in pipes and stuff, the carrying of water to and from the source to your home would have been a big deal. Mm-hmm. Big part of everyday chores. So
all I'm thinking now is Mulan.
Water's heavy.
Water is heavy.
Like, yeah, don't anger the mouse. The mouse is litigious.
Yeah. Water's super heavy. Well,
yeah.
I think this is where a good time to wrap it up. You know, moral of the story is water's heavy. So
and be nice to old ladies and watch where you shoot your arrows.
Be nice to old ladies, watch where you shoot your arrows, and don't ask a woman to let her look at her tidbits. Yeah. That's kind of rude, dude. Anyways, if Elspeth, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter as Lunabird, that is LUNABRD, and I'm also on Instagram as Thingamabrarian. I'm not gonna spell that.
I can just put the links in the episode description. Yeah. So,
I have an Etsy store, so please come and check it out.
Check out her Etsy store. She has amazing bookmarks. Do you make bookmarks on there?
I do make bookmarks, although currently they are offline because I got sold out last year, and I'm saving some for the summer reading challenge that I've submitted to several friend groups.
Yes.
But I also do beaded Christmas ornaments, and this year a portion of the proceeds are going to support the Humane Society in my state.
So, good cause. Check out Elspeth's Etsy store. It'll be in the episode transcription. Buy stuff, especially with Christmas, you know, 6 months away. So
perfect timing. It never hurts to be prepared.
And you know, people, this episode will come out sometime in June. Actually, yeah. So when this episode comes out, I'll probably be at Intelligence Speech, and Elspeth will probably be there too, listening.
Yes, I have my ticket. I'm very excited. There's a lot of really cool presentations listed on the schedule.
Yeah, I have totally done my writing for that as of June 4th. So
I believe you.
The notes are, I have tabs in the book. All I need to do now is make those tabs into notes and make the notes into a nice flowing narrative.
Yeah, another podcaster was saying that they've chosen their font, and that's about it.
I haven't gotten that far. I have an idea with tabs. I think my font is usually just Georgia. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Staying on brand.
But anyways, you can find Elspeth on Twitter, Instagram, or, you know, go to their Etsy page and, you know, help support them. And you can find all the links on the episode transcription or on our website. And then, yeah. So thank you, Elspeth, for your time.
Thank you for inviting me. This was really fun.
And thank you for having... Well, we want to thank you for having... Blah, 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 blah. Staying in. I want to thank you for being here, and I want to thank you once again for being such an awesome archivist, and everyone out there, thank your archivists. They do hard, unseen work. Elspeth always sends the best pictures from their work.
Yeah, we find a lot of weird stuff, and, you know, just making my own fun over here.
I mean, the Codfather was pretty great.
Yeah, I found a series of photos labeled the Codfather, as in fish. I also found one just labeled Beats Me.
Yep. Anyways, Madlavada Nakvamdis, and see you next time.
Bye.
To see images and bibliography related to today's episode, please go to our website to check them out under the episodes page at historyofsakartvelo.com. It contains all the links to our social media and email contact information. Sakartvelo is spelled SakartVelo. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to donate to the podcast via Ko-fi or PayPal. The link is in the episode transcription and on our website. Our Amazon wishlist is also available if you'd like to purchase a book for us. We also have a Patreon, so feel free to pledge to us on there. The best way to help us is via review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba the Nakfamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. See you next time.
Shana Vadir.